How's it going, Relay? We are here for Coach's Corner with Matt Chittum and Stephanie Flippin, who we are so excited to welcome back from the desert. You don't look any worse for the wear. We can't wait to hear more about Lululemon further, which I think a lot of people have some awareness of. But we are here with one of the participants and also a unique role as a coach on the ground. So maybe we can just kick off by Steph. How are you doing? Hey. And tell us all about, you know, what you experienced out there in the desert for 6+ days.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for having this conversation with me, Peter and Matt. I was just mentioning before we started recording that I have been attempting to reacclimate to real life.
Good luck.
A 6-day event, I mean, it has like so many grassroots in the ultra running world, but even for myself as an ultra runner, I certainly didn't enter like the ultra running world with the 6-day event in mind. So I feel like I even had a lot to learn about it, and even just the history behind it as well. But I think, yes, it was a very long trip out to Palm Springs. You know, all of us athletes flew out. I can't remember. I think we flew out like the very end of February. I didn't get back home until the 15th or the 16th. So it was a solid 2 weeks. Yeah, over 2 weeks out there with a ton of like research and protocols like pre-event. Obviously, the event took place for 6 days.
I'm laughing only because you've documented, you've mentioned how many times you've had to pee into a cup. And I'm like, yes. All right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I like, me and the other women that were on the team are in a group chat. And like, I know Camille had texted, like yesterday morning and was like, is anyone still waking up like in a panic, like aware like the urine cups are? So yeah, I mean, that was a solid 2 weeks out in Palm Springs. And not only that, I mean, this has been, the Further Project has been a year and a half in the making for us as athletes, and even longer for like the product innovation team, event planning team, the masterminds behind it. So yeah, I think right now it feels really surreal to be on the other side of it and with the entire event behind us. And yeah, I think I was chatting with my exercise physiologist, one of the lead researchers, Dr. Trent Stellingworth, email yesterday. Just an incredible human. But I was just telling him, as well as my coach Megan, that I'm feeling this incredible, like insane come down right now. I personally did not race. I was super open about that. Coming back from injury and illness, I approached the event more as a large training week and as in more of a supportive role for Rico, the athlete I coach, as well as my teammates. But like emotionally and mentally, I feel like I raced and like I raced hard. And I think there's a lot to be said about the emotional energy that goes into any type of big event, sort of regardless of if you personally are pushing your own physical limits. Mm. And yeah, that's been interesting for me and maybe one of the first times ever in my career where I am processing that.
First time ever, you think?
I think so. Yeah. Like this feeling that I'm like these feelings that I'm going through where like one day I feel depressed, another like moment I feel relieved. Like there, I had like some odd moments where I also felt like a little bit apathetic about just like I'm just floating through my life right now. I don't really feel like I've felt that other than after I've raced like a really, really hard like ultra, maybe like a road marathon too. But yeah, I can't remember the last time I felt this other than like a really hard 100 miler.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I want to come back to that because it feels like we talk about it in the sort of like marathoning conversations like that, you know, the come down from a world marathon major that you built up for three months. But this was a year plus and it's 6+ days. So
nothing of the sleep deprivation, which probably exacerbates the issue.
I feel like we could talk about sleep deprivation at length because I think there's some fascinating insights. I'm curious, like if you were to just maybe just free associate for us, what are some storylines that like stand out to you? I mean, I just feel like there's so much to dive into. We could go for, this could be a 6-hour podcast. It won't be. So I'm just kind of like, what are the bubbles in your brain?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, I approached Further, months ago from a coaching perspective. It was like a very exciting storyline opportunity, just life experience for me to be able to not only coach a brand new athlete, and I'm referring to Rico Kwok. She's a very talented Brazilian jiu-jitsu athlete, so I don't want to frame this as like couch to 6-day ultra event. She does have an athletic background, but it's vastly different, and by no means like endurance focused. So that hands down is my favorite story out of further. And that's really not because of like my like particular involvement in it. For me, like as a coach, like just the moment I met Rico, I saw something in her, like this like spark of magic. And I knew that I wanted to help her have the experience of not only getting to the start line healthy, but getting to that finish line, not hating running and not like just despising ultra running. I think we can all think of athletes, even maybe like points in our own lives where like we finished a race, like we maybe weren't totally trained for it. Maybe we didn't seek coaching guidance and we're like, I never want to do that again. So that was something for me that was really intriguing, to help a brand new runner, sort of like go through the highs and lows and really condense what I feel is like lifelong training, decades and decades upon training, to develop the resiliency, not just physically, but mentally, to be able to really take on a 6-day event and have to condense it in the span of 11 months and get her to a point where she could really realistically tackle this. I so fortunately, the way things lined up, and I attempted to make it this way throughout the event, but Rico and I were able to hit every single one of her distance milestones, like together, side by side, like holding hands at like her first 50K, like within a race setting, 50 miles, 100K, 100 miles, and then 300K, like on her very last lap. I was with her for every step of those. And I'll never have that opportunity again as a coach. I'll try so hard not to get too emotional about it, like during this conversation. But for me, being with her every step of the way and at each of those milestones, it just affirmed to me that every decision I've made in my career, medically, like athletically, everything has been worth it. Like everything.
Wow.
I mean, that was just for me to just see someone like believe in themselves so wholeheartedly, like not give a shit about like what anyone else says or is thinking, was insane and just like the most incredible thing to witness. So that obviously storyline holds a very special place in my heart and always will.
I was curious, I just want to go, we should just jump into there. To me, there's a chicken and egg element to Lululemon further, which is, you know, I love telling stories. I love reading stories. Mm-hmm. And I guess my biggest critique from the onset was like, what is the story?
What is it?
And people are like, well, we don't know. We'll see. I guess it's, that wasn't said exactly to me. And but I think when you unpack Rico's experience, maybe you can help us understand, you know, I just looked it up, 188 miles over 6 days.
Yeah. Being a brand
really,
new runner.
Like, how did you think about, how did you as a team think about like, okay, this is, we have the 6-day, you know, stage on which to make the most of it, however we want to. How were you thinking about it as a team?
Yeah, I think from the get-go, and I think at the sort of inception of Further, I do believe it was centered around, you know, our incredible teammate, Camille Heron, and her ability and her desire to take on, you know, she was very vocal about it too, right? To be the first woman to take a men's record. And I think the entire point of Further was to explore the limits of what like female identifying athletes can do when they are given all of the resources possible, all of the support that say, you know, it's hard to not use this comparison largely because of the specific people who put on the event. Like there's common denominators here between the Breaking 2 event with Nike and this event at Further. There's some commonly shared employees there. You know, and of course, it's really hard to like compare someone like Eliud Kipchoge to like us, like taking on 6 days. But I think the common denominator there is, you know, we can see that thread, right? So I think from the beginning, this was created sort of like an umbrella event with Camille being sort of the keystone of the event to see how many records she could take down, including like the biggest one being the 6-day like men's overall record, which is extremely stout. It's like 654 miles or so. So yeah, and then I think from there it really turned into, okay, like what other records or what other personal like furthest endeavors can the rest of us take on to with that type of support. I'll be totally honest that when I was approached about the event, I think initially we were thinking that it might be like a 24-hour to 48-hour event, which is
That's what I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, which is much more like within my personal wheelhouse and my desire, I think, like in my own personal goals within the sport.
Matt, did you catch that humble brag? That 24 hours within Steph's wheelhouse?
Well, booyah! I have a hard time staying awake for 24 hours, so this whole thing is beyond my scope.
Yeah, I mean, I think like when I say that, it's also in the context of like, I've like run like super rugged, like mountain races, like many years ago.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
Yeah, I've been out there for much longer than 24 hours. I think
there was tension around what we know is brands don't like to fail. And it takes a lot to push a brand all the way to the brink of, there's this great YouTube movie called Iceman about this young team of guys that want to do an Ironman in Antarctica.
Yeah.
And they talk at length. It's on YouTube. Everyone should check it out. And he talks at length about like all these brands that wanted to lend support, but then they just can't risk failure. They're just like, we don't fail. Because they're like, I think it's worth calling out because a lot of the stuff we see is influenced by brand money. I thought it was worth revisiting Breaking 2, like you said. There was a shitload of like negative thoughts about Breaking 2 as it was going about. Sort of a lot of that's washed away as the years have gone by. People are like, oh, totally. Breaking 2 is so great. And that's been followed up by multiple other events. So it's like helpful to remember how many haters there were of what seemed like fairly straightforward. But I found myself in the position of like, okay, 6-day. But like you're saying, once you ask the question, Steph and I were texting a little bit about like some of the super ultra running geeks who were like mapping out like, this is where she's charting within the, and it's just, I mean, I think it's cool. Like,
are they geeks of super ultra running or are they super geeks of ultra running?
I'll pop in here. I'll take the hit.
I want to make sure where in the geek scale I'm positioning this.
I think it's both. I think these folks, like, I have respect for the endeavors these folks take on. I personally, like, I'll be totally honest, like, I didn't enter the sport of running, let alone like ultra running in general, to run as many like flat loops, like for days and days and days as possible. I entered the sport to like explore the world, like explore like different types of terrain. So I think there's a difference in approach. There's a difference in mindset for these folks that are really, really all in. And I will say too, there's a difference. The specific, I think, Peter, we're referring to one of the Facebook groups that popped up during the event. It's probably already been established, but those folks run 6 days around a 400 meter track. That is the sort of standard format for a 6-day event. And I believe that is why there was some pushback about, like a brand like Lululemon, like, and also all of the athletes like competing, maybe besides Camille, have an understanding that these events are typically run around a 400 meter track with like, there's cots like, right, you can pull off. Like the brand and all of us do vividly understand that there was tons of research, like years that went into this. But that's not right, the structure that we were going for, and to be totally like fair to Camille.
And you were also running on, dirt too.
Yeah. Right? So, yeah. Like, there's, like, it was like off road directions. Yeah. And, there's different classifications for terrain. And I believe, I wasn't personally going after records, so I wasn't quite as like invested in these types of like labels and like USATF classifications that someone like Camille was. But I do know that the surface was, there was like an overlap, right? Like, I think it was, could be classified as like trail, but then also open road. So then that opens up all the other records for Camille to have gone, or anyone to have gone after. Yeah, oh, so cool. That was the intention there. But yeah, Peter.
And you can take on, you know, any event can take on what it wants to take
exactly.
on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I appreciated that aspect of it, that it was different. And to your point, Peter, about like just, you know, like years going by, like having gone by and like looking back on an event, I found myself thinking about how, yes, this is insane. Like I never like entered into the event healthy or not thinking like, yes, I'm going to take on like the 6-day record. I just wasn't, like I'm a bit younger, than Camille as well as like my teammate Devin. And I just have a few more goals in the sport that I want to take on before, I mean, from an exercise physiology standpoint, I also just knew that I wasn't willing to put my body through that yet. But in witnessing and being alongside Camille, and seeing her go to depths that I have never seen her go to before, and her and I have raced a handful of times, and I've also like sort of like crewed and support her at other events as well. What was really resonating with me is that in order to be in a place to go after these types of multi-day world records, it takes decades of training. It wasn't about like the training block getting into further. It was not even about the year heading into further. That's really what was standing out to me. And just the understanding that like it takes like the entirety of a career potentially to even be ready mentally and physically to take something like that on. Just I'll put that out there after like witnessing like just how deep Camille had to dig in order to run that many miles in 6 days.
Oh, and then on the other end of the spectrum, you as a coach who's helping Frico, with a lot of other people's help as well, as the whole Lululemon team, everyone who, these are the people who helped behind the scenes, you and all the other athletes. What was it like approaching her as a coach in terms of like the benchmarks that you wanted to set out for her to prepare herself as an endurance athlete, not only for the further event, because I'm sure like that was literally the furthest thing from your mind, like early on in the process, right? Because she was starting from, again, you said not couch to ultra, but from an endurance perspective, it's not too dissimilar from that comparison. So what were some of the benchmarks that you were looking at in terms of that, you know, roughly what, 13-month time frame when you guys started working together? Or if that timeline is not correct, please let me know.
Yeah, to answer your question, Matt, just in terms of the benchmarks that I was looking for with Rico, I mean, we truly started with walking. Like, she had VO2 max testing done. We all did to get sort of like baseline fitness. This was in the lab out of the University of British Columbia with Trent Stellingworth heading all of the testing and the research there.
We're going to try to get Trent on here at some point because there's so much. Yes. I'd love to get his brain on this craziness.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I would absolutely love that. So I started with Rico's baseline data there. And really what that showed is that we needed to start at a walking clip. And a walking pace, like I'm referring to a walking pace for me personally as around like 14 minutes per mile or so. It's a quick walk, right? For Rico, that was her jog. That was her run. And so we built, or I created a training program for her that really started from absolute like ground zero and built up to where we were looking. I was really keeping track of like hours of time on feet per week before I started introducing anything even longer within one session. You know, and honestly, by the end of like the 11 to 12 months or so, like Rico was doing interval work. We built her into some hill strides. We built her into like quicker like track sessions and things like that, just to start to reinforce a bit of a higher turnover and cadence for her. But yeah, I mean, we did have her do 50K like in one go, which I ordinarily would not prescribe that for a brand new athlete. But Rico is very vocal about wanting to take on 50K a day within further to get to 300K total. And so I okayed that because I wanted her to experience what it was like to spend 8+ hours on feet in one go.
Wild. So then I'm curious, maybe just for Coach's Corner, because we're geeking out about coaching. When you think of interval training, I think of the core being just like change in effort level. So for someone like Rico, can that start at, you know, walking and then like running short amounts then back to walking? Yeah. Like, how does that, what were some of those early workouts that, I imagine the digits might look similar, just like the paces would just be different.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. I think initially when we first started, and also Rico really struggled with like anemia. She's also been open about that too. So we also had to get like the iron deficiency anemia on track first. And then once we did, she felt like worlds better. But yeah, I mean, I think if I'm looking back, we really started off with like 1 minute run, 1 minute walk, like, and then slowly building that up to where when she ended up racing a half marathon, we found that running 4 to 5 minutes and then walking 2 minutes was really a great cadence for her, and something that she felt was very sustainable. And we continued to test that out over multiple like back-to-back long runs, which really like a lot of them turned into being like 5 to 6 hour like hikes, with some like running built in. But yeah, that 4 to 5 minute run, 2 minute hike at like an assertive effort was really what we found to be the most efficient for her.
And when you say back to back, I'm just clarifying, you mean one day after the next within training?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So usually, I mean, we built up to her taking on at her max, like 7 to 8 hours, like time on feet in one day. And then the next day she would do like 2 to 3 hours. Wow. That was like what her peak week, like her peak weekend, looked like. Okay. It was super gradual to build her into that, because obviously like with taking on that much time on feet, like injury risk is just skyrockets. But like I said, we really took the entire year to build into that. And yeah, I mean, she trains out of Hong Kong. She got plenty of like heat and humidity training as well. But I think like we really struck a good balance too, because when she was spending that kind of time on feet, like it was also really incredible, like fueling and hydration practice too. So it was sort of like a crash course in ultra running, like to an extreme. But I mean, you know, I certainly did not do this alone. Like she had an amazing like physio, you know, strength coach as well. And we always had Trent Stellingworth in the background, just sort of overseeing things.
Gotcha. And so then I'm curious, when you're training for something like this, there's so many variables. How many do you try to mimic in training? Like I could imagine being like, I'm going to run around my local block and then take sips of water versus, you know, you can also carry calories and hydration with you and go out into the world. So how did you think about like mimicking?
Yeah. You know, we knew from the get-go, or not from the get-go, but we knew like fairly early on that we'd be on a 2.56 or so loop. We knew it would be fairly flat. We also knew that it was going to be like packed dirt, like maybe a bit of gravel, a section of road. So as much as like as much as Rico and I were like, oh, it'd be so fun to take this long run, and like Hong Kong has incredible trails, right? Like tons of like stairs and things like that. I know Rico had came to me and was like, can I hop into this race? And you know, and then I looked at how many like meters of elevation gain we're in, and I was like, ugh, let's save that for next year. Let's keep everything as specific as possible, to further, just because like that many like flat loops, I think with like consistent left-hand turns, because we were unable to switch the direction of the race just based on how many records Camille was going for, and the fact that just the measuring was going to get really muddled by switching directions. I really felt the need to condition her body like very specifically to the course. But I think, like I mentioned, towards the end of her training, like we were definitely doing hill work, just to bolster like her running economy. And she was responding really, really well to that type of training.
That's super interesting. I mean, I've followed Camille's running lightly, probably increasing over time. And what I've found is fascinating. So she went to like jackpot 24 hour, I guess, last year. And I knew other people in the race, and it's like one of these things where, I mean, by the end I joked like, why don't the other men just like line up behind Camille and then like learn from her? But you know, they're like, well, they in theory might have other goals, but the reality is like a lot of people head out into these types of endeavors borrowing from their running stride, and it just like goes really poorly. Like it just, whereas Camille has really adopted like a run that's extremely efficient from my understanding. from like energy, but also from like impact force. And so it seems like something you have to really practice in training. You can't just be like, well, it'll just be somewhat similar to this hilly run.
Yeah. I think specificity really is key, especially like when you're reaching for that, like that extreme limit. But I do think the totality of experience too, like I mentioned, just decades in the sport is also important. I think like Leah Yingling is a great example of that. And she's also been very open about the fact that she's not like a super, super high mileage athlete.
Yeah. I
hate to play the comparison game here, but in the context of further, Leah ran 400 miles. Camille ran what, 568 or something. So a big difference there, but I mean, 400 miles is nothing to like sneeze at. Like it's an enormous amount. I witnessed Leah, like, again, like her, like scrape the bottom of the barrel as well. It's interesting because, you know, Camille was also very open about her total mileage heading into this. And while she no longer pushes like 50K, like solo efforts anymore, like she usually caps her long runs at like 2 hours. And I think like her longest long run was like 22 miles in one go. She was still logging like 130 to 140 mile weeks, just broken up into like a ton of doubles, sometimes even triples. So that's an interesting approach. Meanwhile, Leah topped out at like 55 mile weeks for further.
I'm curious about, as a coach, how you think about, you know, you just want to create the best plan for your athlete. Camille has been very vocal. There's been like all these articles written about like her not doing as much of the long run, which I'm like, I don't know how much we should extrapolate anything from Camille. Like, great. You're so far out here.
Yeah, correct. Like an outlier. Yeah.
So then how do you think about, I think it's funny, your brain starts to be like, well, with an N of 2 or 3, maybe we have some data on you can do a 6 day off of relatively lower mileage, quote unquote. How do you think about it?
Yeah. You know, what I was witnessing, and I don't, again, like I spoke about this, like with Leah, like within the event, I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth, although I was sort of like observing this. I do feel like for something like a 6 day event, I don't feel like you need to be hammering like the high mileage weeks, because from like a mental perspective, you can kind of like approach the 6 day and similar to like how I did, like as just a very, very big training week, because physically, like you cannot not sleep at all for 6 days. Like you'll die. Like, I mean, you can't not sleep. I mean, you can push the limits of sleep deprivation, like Camille and former like record holders have. But I think from witnessing what Leah was going through, it was more of this, like, this is a really like enormous training week. Like, I'm still like going to bed and getting like a significant amount of sleep. By significant, I mean like 5 to 6 hours, which for some people, like that's what they're functioning off of like day to day. But yeah, I do think there's a difference there, and you can break it up. You can like, it's not like, oh, I'm trying to like chase cutoffs, right? Or I'm not trying to run this as fast as possible, even though like you are, right? Like you're trying to maximize the amount of distance you're running, but it's just a different approach.
It's a really, it pushes the boundaries in such interesting ways. I think what's kind of fun is to think about what are the principles that come into play in something so long, and but then how might they relate to everyday runners? Like I listened to an interview with Leah where they referenced she would start each day with a coffee lap. Was that something?
What is that?
Tell us about that.
Yeah, I know she was like getting up every morning, like, you know, and she had shifted her sleep schedule to be initially to be where she was sleeping during the day because it was pretty hot. Like it was like mid 70s, low 80s, like at some points. But yeah, she would sort of start the day like drinking a coffee, maybe like walking a lap, like really like easing into it, and like approaching each like new run, even if it was like 4 p.m. and she had stopped running at like 10 a.m. or something. She was approaching each run as sort of like a fresh new day, which I think that's something that a lot of us as ultra runners utilize, like with even within like a continuous 100-mile race where we are trying to run as fast as possible. There's no napping going on. But like things like, I know Courtney DeWalter has used it too, like brushing your teeth, like during a race, like washing your hands, like doing something that's like a physical, like
just a reset.
I don't know. Like something that's like almost like ceremonial that you're like signaling to your brain that this is like, we're refreshed now. Like we can reset, like you just mentioned. Like it's not this like continuous, like just run forever and ever and ever, even though it is like in the 6 days like context. But I think those types of mental resets are really important, so that you are not getting into this hole of like, I'm in prison, when is this going to end? And like, is this a torture event or am I like exploring the limits like of further?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the funniest thing, I think I texted this to you, is like the commentators on the Facebook page who geek out about this stuff are like, oh, Camille is showing such promise. If she commits to this event, she could like really do well in the future. And you're like, oh my God, people think of 6 days as like something you would do multiple times in
multiple
your career.
But I'm like,
why wouldn't they? I don't know. Like once you get your head around, I mean, I think that's how a lot of us thought when we first learned about 100 milers. We were like, what? Ah, no. So yeah, I'm curious where this left you with, like, did you have different perspective on, say, 200s or, you know, 100 milers in general?
Yeah, I think, you know, witnessing my teammates go through everything. I think I have a background, like I crewed and paced my husband Mitchell when he raced Tahoe 200. So I had a little bit of experiencing like the multiple nights. I think me personally, I still like, I love my sleep so much. I'm still like on the fence about like how much sleep deprivation I'm willing to put my body through. You know, that probably is also like coming into play is just that I've been under an enormous amount of stress like over the past few years. So I'm just like, I don't want to do anything that puts me over like that limit again and leads to injury or something. But yeah. I will say, just like even just witnessing and like being by like Leah's side for a lot of miles, and Devin as well, throughout further, I mean, both of them just picked up so many like troubleshooting lessons and like ways to pivot, ways to adapt. And me just like witnessing that with them, I felt like I was learning more about like, okay, like, you know, having to run through like two nights or something like that. It's doable. And it's something that I am more so wrapping my mind around. I do think that I want to like hold off on those types of events, sure, for a good while. And I know I've said this before, like in our conversations, but sometimes like I feel like I maybe know a little bit too much about like the medical and like exercise physiology side of things. And I think that like weighs in my mind. I'm like, oh man, like just the hormonal impacts. I don't know. Like you just never know, right? Like how long it's going to take to recover from something like that. I know Camille and her husband Connor, who coaches her, were very open like at the event that like Camille will not be racing until like very, very later this fall. Understandably, I mean,
it'd be super easy to make a mistake in the recovery process.
Yeah.
I'm curious about briefly like the crew experience. Like you were there sort of as a crew, but you also went well over 100 miles. Our, you know, former member of Relay, Carolyn, was there to support. How did you all think about, you know, you want to get, I guess, rest yourselves. Like, how did you think about how to structure your days?
Yeah. You know, that was a conversation that I had, again, with my coach, Megan Roach, you know, because I am coming off of like injury, illness, and just a lot of personal life stress. Like, she was like, I want you to aim to get like 7 to 8 hours of sleep, like per day. We want to keep you healthy. Like, it's going to be hard for you to do that. And it wasn't hard because like, I didn't want to sleep. It was hard because like, I'm the type of person, like, I don't know if it's like, I'm just mothering or what it is, but it was so, so difficult for me to pull myself away, like from the environment and honestly, like put myself to bed. Like it was hard.
Yeah.
Like I just, you know, and I wanted to be a part of it, like every moment, not selfishly, but just because I just knew, like I could witness my friends and my teammates just going into the pain cave and like having to stay there for 6 days. And I know what that feels like in a much lesser context. And I wanted to be able to shoulder like that burden and take as much of it as I like physically could. But then it became this thing where I was like, oh my God, I've been out here for 4 hours, you know, like walking or like power hiking or like helping and things like that. And it's like, well, that's still a lot of time on feet too. And I, yeah, so it was definitely a challenge. I took on, like, I wasn't even tracking my mileage. Like, I didn't even realize I'd like hit 100 miles. And then I was like, oh, it seems like everyone's like cheering a lot for me. Like, what's going on? you know, I just, my own like distance goals, like it, that just really wasn't, why I had lined up. But yeah, I think for me, like my goal was to be able to get enough sleep, like enjoy the life, the incredible life experience, but then to also be able to come out of the event and be able to like run and train in like the way that I wanted to, which for me meant like I could safely do like a speed workout, like 4 days later.
And you weren't, like there's any number of ways that this event could have sapped you beyond that being a possibility. I'm curious, with all the data collection, it's been really cool. We are following, you know, constant glucose monitoring, lots of blood draws before and after. We heard about cognitive testing at different times. We heard about constant core temperature readings. Did I already mention glucose?
You did, yeah.
Okay, sorry, glucose. Yeah. And then
the biomechanics.
The force plate out in the desert. Mm-hmm. So I want to hear about like what stood out to you. Like, what are you taking away from this from as a science?
Yeah, I think one of the most exciting things to me, like because I played like a fairly large role in it too, just during like product innovation and development, along with Leah and Devin, was the core temperature monitoring. So all of us like each morning took a core temperature pill that we swallowed. Like all of the medical and research team could track like where it was like in our bodies, like on an iPad, which is, it got to be a little bit funny because people are like, have you passed it yet? Which like, it's like, have you pooped it out yet? Like got to take another one. That element of it is kind of funny, but yeah, I think, because, I played such a large role, like in developing the topical cooling products, with the brand, that initially wasn't a focus, with the product innovation team. So things like, the ice bandanas that were created, the arm sleeves that had specific pockets over pulse points, to place ice in, all the ice hats, we like had a super, super popular like ice tank, that was super form fitting.
There's some like swoops in it.
Yep, with like very specific fabric. It takes out the need. I know Nike had come out with like an ice vest that we saw like probably most famously at the track trials last year in Eugene.
That's a little different.
Different though. Yeah.
Yeah. The idea of the ice vest, it came about like in 2004, I think, Dina wore one as part of the Olympic team in Athens. And you saw like, you know, competitors go into the line with like a lower, but then they just take it off and they go on their day, where you were talking about all these like along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, like I would totally understand, like even myself, like running a road marathon, I like wouldn't necessarily want to be like weighted down by physical ice while running.
I don't know,
but,
man.
Like a lot of
Orlando was nuts. Like I was like, anyway, these people can cool themselves.
Yeah. Right. So I feel like the products that we developed in conjunction with the product innovation team, I mean, we were seeing some really, really promising data. And for listeners, you know, the data and the research on topical cooling actually isn't that great. A lot of it is lab based. A lot of it is also like in male athletes too. Uh-huh. And a lot of the data is more of like temporary effects, like not like, you know, like anything significant, like altering by no means like VO2 max or, you know, like endurance to be able to hold a specific pace for X amount of time longer with topical cooling. Obviously, I'm not like an analyst. I'm not personally on the research team, so I can't speak to like the exact findings, but I know large disclaimer there.
We're podcasting here.
But I like what I was hearing from the team, though, is that like we were getting a lot of really, really solid data about like the positive impacts of topical cooling that maybe hasn't been so positively reflected in prior research. So that was something that was exciting to me.
I mean, you always hear every year at Western States that, you know, like each athlete has something like 115 pounds of ice committed mm-hmm. to them. And then yeah. if you've like followed, I've only mostly followed from afar, you know, like years ago, Rob Krar like tying this big hat and he's got this huge chunk of ice on his head. And you're thinking like, I'd see why you'd arrive at that as a solution, but we would much prefer Stephanie Flippin's mind with a team of, you know, apparel designers to say like, how could we target this a little better?
Yeah. I mean, like just to give like, and I'll touch on like some of the other things I was excited about too. I won't like go, I feel like our listeners are like, Stephanie's obsessed with ice and topical
cream. No, but I mean, well, hey, but I mean, I think we're all going to be
in a warming world.
In a warming yeah. world where you're like, how do I get out there? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was really kind of funny. It's hard for me to not look at the ice bandanas that we developed without thinking of them as a thyroid shield that like you wear in the operating room. Like if you're using intraoperative fluoroscopy, you know, that includes like the lead apron. But it was actually intentional to be in the same shape as a thyroid shield just because it's like covering, like it's fully hitting like your carotids and it's like, and just hitting like your orbital bone, like in the back.
We got a nerd on the case. I like it. Yeah.
So that like those types of details are really exciting to me because it's merging like medical exercise physiology with like the needs of runners.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like gone are the days, and all due respect, I have so many great friends that have like hand sewn, you know, yeah. like ice bandanas, things like that. But it's like, you know, it's time. Like it's time for us to have these products. And even extrapolating further, like outside of athletics, I mean, like
oh, yeah.
even just any patient that comes in with like that's hyperthermic or like maybe that happens like after like receiving anesthesia, things like that. I just feel like it has a lot of really cool implications.
Yeah. I mean, I did the speed project years ago where you run through Death Valley and, you know, people are giving each other pointers on like find a traditional bandana and spin up the ice. And you're like, I mean, that's, and once you feel the effects and you're like, oh, I feel calmer. I feel better. I'm able to move without my heart rate jacking up. That feels like a very blunt instrument compared to what you all were optimizing for.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was exciting to me. I feel like the biomechanics component was also just top yeah. notch.
Tell me about
you know, so from the get-go we like hit the ground running with the biomechanics team. A lot of that was placing like sensors like all over our bodies, like every single part of our body, especially like for bra development. So that portion came into play, same thing with like shoe development as well. But at further at the event, the biomechanics team like built this huge tent that was just past a mile from the beginning of the course. So it was a mile out there. They had to like pour specific concrete. They had to bring in extremely expensive force plates, like I believe from Europe, and had to build this extremely expensive tent that was running 24/7. The biomechanics team was like pretty much working in shifts and in 8-hour shifts.
And so you would hit this every single lap as you went through, they'd be able to get data on how your body was moving in space. Okay.
Yep. Exactly. I'm not like an expert on this by any means, but some of like the images that I was seeing, I mean, they were able to see like, we were shown like our entire like skeletons and like,
I saw images of that shared somewhere.
Yeah. It was insane. I know like there was one like really cool video that they got of, and like Leah and I were like, I think that's me and you, because we just look really short running through, and we were like, yeah. I think that's our strides. But yeah, even at one point, you know, they had mentioned like Leah was just having some sort of like weird like upper body like intercostal like soreness. And then it was like, okay, well, maybe like look up, like lift your chin up a little bit more. Yeah. I mean, we were troubleshooting in real time based on like the biomechanics like data that they were giving us. That was really, really neat. And I was also laughing to myself too, because since I was not out racing this, but I did do like a light, I was just doing like 30 seconds on, like 90 seconds off. So like a light sort of like 200 meter workout one day, just honestly to get the legs moving. But I didn't like want to be that sort of like asshole that does that through the biomechanics tent, but one of one of our like event coordinators was like, no, do it like that. Like that way we can like have that type of data too. So it was just sort of funny. Like we were joking. It was like heel strike, going through. I think that was on like day four of the event. But yeah, I just, it's going to be really, really neat to see all of that data come together and see what they found, especially from like a fatigue perspective, and maybe even to challenge some of the notions about like just how much form breaks down too. I'd be interested to see that.
I mean, it just feels like, yeah, short, fast events, they happen. And then you just try to take stock of what occurred. 100 milers, like you, I have started to appreciate the 100 miler for being like somewhat similar to a marathon, but really like pulled slowly apart. So like you even like, and so this just feels like an extenuation of that. You're like, oh, I think it was Leah who said like she checked in with that team and said like, any advice? Cause she was having that pain. And they're like, you know, the idea that you could get form cues or form changes, in the middle of the event is just better than after. So that's awesome.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I think too, like, I know there was a lot of like chatter about like how like maybe excessive like this event was, you know, and that's, you know, that's like totally fair. I welcome any type of like, you know, like criticism. But another part of me just wants to ask, like, I mean, but we've had decades and decades and billions of dollars poured into like male athletes, you know? And yeah, this may have been a very like extreme event, like in all like, you know, sense of the word, but at the same time, like, why not? Like,
yeah.
You know,
you're going in, like go all in and then, and it wasn't a race in the traditional sense of like, it wouldn't have helped anyone to have 100 people there. Yeah. It's, I guess it's like anything where you lay out multiple priorities and then you realize like, oh, there's some trade-offs here. No one, I mean, like, we live in a social media influencer world, like, you know, like when people are always like, thank you for being hosting me at this brand dinner. And I'm like, that didn't help anyone but the people who ate the fancy food. So like, once you go big, you might as well go all in. There was, I mean, there's just so many layers to one thing Leah mentioned that I was curious about was this idea of electrolytes. I've been hearing chatter from different people. It just feels like nutrition. I'm more of like a traditional roadrunner, marathoner. I mean, my joke with Boston people was like, they'll give you like bananas on the course because the traditional thinking was like, if you're calf cramps, maybe you're low on sodium, potassium, and you need some. And I'm like, the thing about that process, like your calf is cramping, you're going to take in a banana and then it's going to digest and like, it doesn't really add up. And so, but it feels like there was a lot of chances to learn about different nutrition strategies. Leah had mentioned potentially taking too much salt in, which I think is fascinating because she said, I'm a heavy sweater on the one. And that's an idea that a lot of people are like, kind of bluntly, oh, if I sweat a lot, just pound the salt like endlessly.
And that's, Yeah, I think I've mentioned it like on Relay before, but I think one of, and like we said, in a warming like world, on a warming planet, I think like one of the most invaluable things that you can have done as an athlete is to get your sweat tested, so that you can get your sodium content actually measured. It's a little bit of an investment. I wouldn't say that it's, I mean, it's less expensive than an MRI, but the cool thing about it is that it doesn't change like over the course of your life. You can get it done one time and there might be like some slight fluctuations as you age, but really it comes down to genetics. So once you have that tested like one time, you can utilize that, moving forward. You know, so like Leah being a heavy sweater, she like might lose like a large amount of fluid, but the sodium content within that amount of sweat that she's losing might not be that high. So you're right in that, like I got my sweat tested, a few years back. So did my husband Mitchell. It's wild because like me, I'm like pretty much average, like, you know, the amount of fluid I lose is, you know, what the American College of Sports Medicine like says is the exact average. And I replace with about 500 to 600 milligrams of sodium per hour. And that's also like spot on with the average. Whereas my husband Mitchell loses like around the same amount of fluid that I do, but he like really needs to replace like like in like the 1800 milligrams of sodium per hour, which is wild. And he would be, he is definitely considered an outlier with that. And yeah, and there are tons of, there's some really fascinating like genetic data and like evolutionary facts on why some people have such a higher sodium content. And
I just think it's fascinating how much we know that we pick up cues from the people we train with, like whoever we start the sport with, maybe whatever events we start with. So I think it's worth, it's like opening up these boxes that people, different sports have just kept closed. You're just like, oh, I just do what my friend does, but maybe you have very different physiology and maybe your friend is, you know, doing it right or wrong for themselves. So I think it's great to just question some of those classic things that we had no way of knowing until recently. And, you know, maybe, were there other things around, it sounds like, you know, unsurprisingly, there was so many types of food available, like every type of gel, every type of like solids, like what, anything stand out to you that like people might be interested
in? Yeah, I think just the fact that like just having a huge variety of solid foods and like not just engineered sports nutrition for an event like this is so important. I mean, again, kind of hard for me, like I wasn't personally racing, so like I was eating a very regular dinner each night that maybe had more fiber than I would typically ingest if I had been all out racing, but yeah, I just, it was so impactful to have a chef on hand. And for listeners too, this was heavily planned ahead of time. It wasn't like a chef and his team was just brought on and they're like, all right, what do you guys feel like eating? Right. we did a really extensive like surveys, you know, like I remember having to type out like every possible meal that I would want, like leading into an event, in terms of like carb loading, what I would want to eat during the event and then after. I do think it was a learning point for the brand and like the Canadian Sports Institute, because they are used to working, they aren't used to working with ultra runners and like, let alone like a 6-day event. So yeah, I think there is a lot of learning going around for everyone. You know, I'm a vegan, so so I had to sort of build that in too. It was pretty wild, and yeah, it was crazy that like there was this huge like kitchen area set up. It was like, you know, crew members and like crew captains were like barreling down towards the kitchen on like golf carts that we each had for each team, like shouting like, I need like a root beer float stat. Or like for Leah, it was like, I need like 40 pierogies.
Yeah, apparently the pierogi is like, pierogies. I love it. Like, I mean, food is wonderful, right? Like culturally different parts of the world like get their carbs and proteins in different ways. And so it's like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's also very cool, you know, to hear like, you know, the Korean food that was being requested. You know, I know Rico's partner is also a chef, so he was also like doing a lot of the cooking. I had an amazing like rice and seaweed ball out on course with Rico at one point. I think those aspects were really cool too. And like sort of tied the, what felt to me like the world together at this event, just having so much representation. Obviously like there are language barriers, but it was just really neat for all of us to connect purely at like this running level. Like, you know, I remember running laps with Yoon Young, the athlete that came over from South Korea. And like, there was a clear language barrier, but we honestly communicated for like hours, like without needing to have like that common commonality between us. And that was just really, really cool. It was neat to see that and experience that in real time.
Yeah. I mean, definitely makes sense. I think it makes sense to have a longer event. Like even this sounds absurd, but even a 24 or 48 hour event feels like it would just sprint by and less chances for learning, for stories, for all those things. So in that sense, like 6 day, although I still am like, who came up with 6 day and not 7 day? Feels like I ran for a week would be a fun thing to say, but that's
fine. I know. Yeah, that's such a, like an odd, like it, I mean, and it goes back to like really old school, like ultra running, like history. I don't know why it was like established at 6 days, but I think like from a coaching perspective, and then also just like witnessing all of my teammates go through things, I did notice, I felt like probably 3 days would have been solid. I did notice a pretty sharp decline just in like obviously, like morale, like physical energy by the fourth day. Yeah. I think day four, like early day five, was when in my mind I was like, is this safe? Like, I mean,
yeah.
Yes, like we were all safe. Like there's no question about that. But I was just, I mean, there were some crazy things starting to happen, right? And we're like, oh gosh, like we got to be really, really careful now. And I just feel like that's, like I said, day four, like early day five is when things just started to deteriorate, like from a mental perspective for a lot of the athletes.
Gotcha.
So like in my mind, I thought, you know, what would have been cool, like potentially from a storytelling perspective is maybe like this would have been a 3-day event, get all the data we need. Like, you know, that's enough time, like you mentioned, for us to all sort of work through life stretched out over 3 days. And then maybe like the sort of like kicker there would be like, and like, we're going to continue this on for 6 days for Camille to keep going. Yeah. And it's optional for the rest of us. Right. That's something that we, a few of us had spoken about.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. And I would have no concept for, I mean, it makes sense even when I give athletes or I've done like, you know, 6x mile myself, like the fourth mile, you're like, oh God, like right? I'm deep into it. And I'm also pretty far from finishing. So it's hard, that morale dip. I can't even extrapolate to the physiological.
Yeah.
Over that many hours.
I know. I think too, it was like, as a coach, I was so excited to get Rico to that 100-mile mark. You know, that was like a big milestone for her and for all of us to celebrate as a team. And it almost felt like when she hit that, like, and we all came in together and we all celebrated that, it almost felt like that should have like sort of been like the end, at least to me, right? Because I wasn't personally racing, and then sort of optional to continue on after that. I think we were all feeling this sense of closure at that moment in time. And I think that was really cool too, because I mean, I wasn't racing, but there's 9 other women that were, like 8 others besides Rico, all each with their own like distance goals. But we all sort of felt this like closure once Rico hit 100 miles.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. That like sort of the rest of our goals, it's not that they didn't matter, but we just like funneled so much into Rico and like all that she stood for.
Gotcha. That's awesome.
I've been writing about it, like, that you'll appreciate, but
okay,
yeah,
good.
I think we all just felt this sense that like we're all Rico at least at some point in time in our lives.
Yeah. Well, this idea of like taking on something that's super overwhelming and like, how does it, the idea that you have essentially as much time as you need. So that relieves that type of stress.
Chasing cutoffs, yeah.
Chasing cutoffs or, yeah, just like how fast can you – I mean, Leah talked about like they had made it a 400-mile race and just been like, oh, no, like this franticness.
Yeah,
of
it would
like,
have been different. Yeah.
Very different. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it allows it to flip it to Rico being like, yeah, I need – what am I truly driven to accomplish? And, you know, then – yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I think it makes sense from a storytelling, just be like, everyone's going to go for 6 days, but yeah, it lets some of the air out of the tension around like this person's completing something that is actually meaningful within it. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, I'm sure people who are part of it will continue to figure out what it meant to them. Like I said, like the original breaking two is now 7 years ago. So, I mean,
yeah,
you have time to like, try things, try them again. Aside from the 3-day, which I think is fascinating, were there other goals that people came out of this with? I know it's way too soon, but anything that people were like, you know, I'd like to try that.
I think we all came out of it like what you and I had touched on, being like, okay, like maybe I can wrap my mind around, you know, eventually running something like Cocodona or like a 200 mile or something like that. I think more so than that is I think we all just realize that we're all adults. Like, you know, I think Montana may have been the youngest on the team. She's 27. But it has just been so long since we, like, as adult women have had the opportunity to be on a team. And I have teammates, like I train with training partners, but it was just different, right? It was different. It felt like this I mean, I don't want to like liken it to like the Super Bowl or anything like that, but it right. it was like an event. It was like an event, right? That was like
more
than just like five friends running, you know, Boston Marathon together. Yeah. Like, you know, like it was just obviously like more impactful than that. And for me, like, I just realized, like, gosh, like these things that we prioritize as children, the things that like you probably prioritize, like for, like getting your son into, I'm like, it's such a shame that that tends to taper off like once we enter adulthood for numerous reasons. Yeah. Right. And I think it, for me, it just reminded me that like, it doesn't have to. Yeah, I don't know. That's how I coach too. Like, I feel like a lot of times with like positive affirmations, it's like, that's really what we as adults need oftentimes. And like, we receive that as children, but again, like, we don't necessarily have someone in our corner like championing for us or believing in ourselves more often than like we believe in our own goals. So I felt that sort of similarity there in this event that like, gosh, I really missed this. I really missed like this type of like camaraderie and the fact that like, shit, like none of this actually really matters what each of us runs, you know, like it really doesn't, but like we're in it together.
That's wonderful. And I think we should try to find a way to explore this in a future Coach's Corner, maybe with a guest who can, because you kicked this off by talking about, you know, this dramatic come down, which is the cycle of, you know, human nature. I mean, I think in my first job, I was still an athlete, like still running. And I had one of my mentors was equating how he essentially was just always getting burnt out because the consulting life had no real cyclicalness to it. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but as an athlete, you would have an on season and off season. Like,
yeah, right.
And we just like take a weekend and go back to grinding out the next project. And that's that like obsessive work culture. But to your, maybe you're not looking in fully enjoying or looking forward to this like down swoop you're a part of, but I would imagine it's a reflection of the highs that you've experienced.
Yeah, definitely. And I have felt myself in the past few days like being removed from further, just like, I don't want to say like existential like crises, because it's not a crisis, but just like really reflecting back on like what I want to do moving forward, like who I want to be, what I want to stand for. And I've personally been like on that type of journey for a while now, and as you know, just dealing with grief and loss. But this was different though too. I feel like, yeah, it's really had me like taking a step back. And just being like, how do I want to move forward with my life after having gone through this honestly like life-changing type of experience? I think that's for anyone who was like really far removed from further, or like understandably like confused about the event because there wasn't a whole ton of like press like building into it, or like a very clear explanation of the goals or what it was. Yeah, I think that's what I have personally taken from it, is that like this was an experience, like a once in a lifetime experience, and I don't want to let it just go and like just let it like release my grip on it. I want to continue to have it be this meaningful part of my life and what I can take from it moving forward.
Wow. Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, those are the things we all are trying to figure out, you know, what are we trying to hang on to that life might lead us away from, but that's wonderful. Hopefully you all have a reunion of some type.
We've got some, I don't know if I can like talk about all those things, but there's definitely going to be some post further, like really exciting, like a very major project coming out too, that'll hopefully share with the world, like more of what the past year and a half was like.
Makes sense. That's awesome. Cool. Yeah. I hope this is not the last time we will speak about it, because there's more to learn and more to share. But thank you so much for hopping on and live processing. This is cool.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Peter. And thanks, Matt, as well.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you next week.